and gentlemen, I want to welcome you to the call today. It is a wonderful day. We call this Think and Grow Rich Thursday, July 19, 2012. Wonderful day to be alive, wonderful day to be breathing, wonderful day to be thinking and pondering and making better choices and learning new information. And I'm so excited to be on this call with you here each morning. And, you know, just to restate, one of our missions here is to discover the truth and apply the truth in our lives so that we can have more joy and happiness and so that we can make more money and help more people and be more financially prosperous in our lives. And I was going through some of the thread on, you know, we have a Facebook group, just in case you don't know, it's wearethinkandgrowrich.com, where a lot of our community members, myself included, will, you know, post things from the call that stuck out to us and maybe even sometimes things that we might not agree with. And there's a discussion that happens there. And I love that discussion because I learn a lot from it. And yesterday, as I was going through some of the threads, I realized something that was really important, and I want to share that with you before we start the call or before we get into the content. What I learned was that in our search for the truth and in our search to, you know, find principles and laws that we can apply in our lives, we're not going to be perfect, and we all know that, right? So we know that, you know, when we come on this line, we've got all sorts of different people, all sorts of different levels of success, all sorts of different backgrounds, all sorts of belief systems. And one of the things that we need to do and we want to do is we need to think. And that's really, oh gosh, you know, that's the foundation of Think and Grow Rich. That's the foundation of, you know, what we do here is we're learning to think. We're learning to think. And part of that entails learning, understanding that we're going to hear a lot of truth on this call. We're going to hear a lot, you know, from Dr. Napoleon Hill, who spent 25 years of his life studying and thinking and pondering and connecting with, I think it was 25,000 people, 500 of them being extremely financially successful, and many of them being not financially successful. But the bottom line is we're going to hear a lot of truth. The other thing that might happen is we might hear some opinion and we might hear some belief. And what we need to do as individuals is we need to understand that and recognize it and accept it and appreciate it for what it is. Because here's the realization that I had. In my search for truth, I want to hear truth, and truth will resonate with me. And the better I get at thinking and pondering and processing ideas, hearing maybe some things that are out of alignment with truth occasionally is also good in the truth-seeking process if we're thinking and if we have our minds open and if we're, you know, really endeavoring to seek the truth. Because then when we hear things that are out of alignment with truth, we can say, hey, you know, that might not be 100% accurate. And I'm glad that I was thinking enough to catch that and say, I don't want to accept that into my belief system because I believe that's maybe out of alignment with the truth. So the point of me sharing this is have your minds open, be listening, but be thinking also, be processing ideas. So you can't just, you don't want to come to a call like this, just like you don't want to do this in any part of life. You don't want to just go open your ears and open your eyes and let whoever dump whatever into your brain. It's your responsibility, and that's one of the things that I'm learning, and I hope we're all learning on this call, is that it is our individual responsibility to have our minds and to guard our minds. And for me, I didn't know that I could do that until just a couple of years ago, and even I'm learning more and more on this call. I didn't know that I could protect my mind, and I didn't know that I could think and decide what to accept and what to reject. So for the first 30 years of my life, I just kind of, you know, accepted most of whatever was being given to me by all the different sources. And so I just want to point that out. that we are going to hear a lot of truth on this call, and that is our goal. That's my goal, to discover the truth and apply it in my life and teach it to the best of my ability. So we're going to hear a lot of truth on this call, and we have heard so much truth, and we have so many people have changed lives through this call, myself included. Every day my life is changing because of this call and because of the things that I'm hearing from each of you. So that's the major awesome part of it. And just keep in mind that we might hear some things that are out of alignment with truth occasionally. It doesn't happen a lot. But it will happen because we're people. And so just be aware of that. Okay. Just be aware of that. Understand it, appreciate it, recognize it, say, hey, you know what? It's good that I'm not at a place where I can just have everything dumped into my head, but rather I'm at a place where I'm taking responsibility for my thinking, and I'm analyzing and thinking about what's coming at me. So just a thought to start the call out with today. And that being said, let's jump into the content. We're studying fears. And I love how Dr. Hill taught us that fears are ghosts because they are in our minds. They are states of mind. We can control, we can eliminate fear if we so choose. And we learned yesterday about the fear of poverty that stood at the head of the list. And today we're going to learn about the fear of criticism. Just how man originally came by this fear, no one can state definitely, but one thing is certain. He has it in a highly developed form. Some believe that this fear made its appearance about the time that politics became a profession. Others believe it can be traced to the age when women first began to concern themselves with styles in wearing apparel. This author, being neither a humorist nor a prophet, is inclined to attribute the basic fear of criticism to that part of man's inherited nature which prompts him not only to take away his fellow man's goods and wares, but to justify his action by criticism of his fellow man's character. It is a well-known fact that a thief will criticize the man from whom he steals, that politicians seek office not by displaying their own virtues and qualifications, but by attempting to besmirch their opponents. The fear of criticism takes on many forms, the majority of which are petty and trivial. Bald-headed men, for example, are bald for no other reason than their fear of criticism. Heads become bald because of the tight-fitting bands of hats which cut off circulation from the roots of the hair. Men wear hats not because they actually need them, but because everyone is doing it. The individual falls into line and does likewise, lest some other individual criticize him. Women seldom have bald heads or even thin hair because they wear hats which fit their heads loosely, the only purpose of the hats being adornment. But it must not be supposed that women are free from the fear of criticism. If any woman claims to be superior to man with reference to this fear, ask her to walk down the street wearing a hat of the vintage of 1890. The astute manufacturers of clothing have not been slow to capitalize this basic fear of criticism, with which all mankind has been cursed. Every season, the styles in many articles of wearing apparel change. Who establishes the styles? Certainly not the purchaser of clothing, but the manufacturer. Why does he change the style so often? The answer is obvious. He changes the style so he can sell more clothes. For the same reason, the manufacturers of automobiles, with a few rare and very sensible exceptions, change styles of models every season. No man wants to drive an automobile which is not of the latest style, although the older model may be actually the better car. We have been describing the manner in which people behave under the influence of fear of criticism as applied to the small and petty things of life. Let us now examine human behavior when this affects people in connection with the more important events of human relationship. Take, for example, practically any person who has reached the age of mental maturity from 35 to 40 years of age, as a general average, and if you could read the secret thoughts of his mind, you would find a very decided disbelief in most of the fables taught by the majority of the dogmatists and the theologians a few decades back. Not often, however, you will find a person who has the courage to openly state his belief on the subject. Most people will, if pressed far enough, tell a lie rather than admit that they do not believe the stories associated with that form of religion which held people in bondage prior to the age of scientific discovery and education. Why does the average person, even in this day of enlightenment, shy away from denying his belief in the fables which were the basis of most of the religions a few decades ago? The answer is because of the fear of criticism. Men and women have been burned at the stake for daring to express disbelief in ghosts. It is no wonder we have inherited a consciousness which makes us fear criticism. The time was, and not so far in the past, when criticism carried severe punishments. It still does in some countries. The fear of criticism robs man of his initiative, destroys his power of imagination, limits his individuality, takes away his self-reliance, and does him damage in 100 other ways. Parents often do their children irreparable injury by criticizing them. The mother of one of my boyhood chums used to punish him with the switch almost daily, always completing the job with the statement, "You'll land in the penitentiary before you are 20. He was sent to a reformatory at the age of 17. Criticism is the one form of service of which everyone has too much. Everyone has a stock of it which is handed out, whether called for or not. One's nearest relatives often are the worst offenders. It should be recognized as a crime. In reality, it is a crime of the worst nature for any parent to build inferiority complexes in the mind of a child through unnecessary criticism. Employers who understand human nature get the best there is in men, not by criticism, but by constructive suggestion. Parents may accomplish the same results with their children. Criticism will plant fear in the human heart or resentment, but it will not build love or affection. Symptoms of the fear of criticism. This fear is almost as universal as the fear of poverty, and its effects are just as fatal to personal achievement, mainly because this fear destroys initiative and discourages the use of imagination. The major symptoms of the fear are self-consciousness, generally expressed through nervousness, timidity in conversation and in meeting strangers, awkward movement of the hands and limbs, shifting of the eyes. Lack of poise, expressed through lack of voice control, nervousness in the presence of others, poor posture of body, poor memory. Personality, lacking in firmness of decision, personal charm, and ability to express opinions definitely. The habit of sidestepping issues instead of meeting them squarely, agreeing with others without careful examination of their opinions. Inferiority complex. The habit of expressing self-approval by word of mouth and by actions as a means of covering up a feeling of inferiority. Using big words to impress others, often without knowing the real meaning of the words. Imitating others in dress, speech, and manners. Boasting of imaginary achievements. This sometimes gives a surface appearance of a feeling of superiority. Extravagance. The habit of trying to keep up with the Joneses, spending beyond one's income. Lack of initiative. Failure to embrace opportunities for self-advancement, fear to express opinions, lack of confidence in one's own ideas, giving evasive answers to questions asked by superiors, hesitancy of manner and speech, deceit in both words and deeds. And the last symptom, lack of ambition. Mental and physical laziness, lack of self-assertion, slowness in reaching decisions, easily influenced by others, the habit of criticizing others behind their backs and flattering them to their faces, the habit of accepting defeat without protest, quitting an undertaking when opposed by others, suspicious of other people without cause, lacking in tactfulness of manner and speech, unwillingness to accept the blame for mistakes. And that is fear number two, the fear of criticism, and it is a big one. Let me unmute the lines. I'm anxious to hear your thoughts, my friend. Star six to unmute your line.
Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Melvin.
Hey, listen, I just loved how you started this whole thing off today. That is... I don't know where you came from with it or what how it came about, but it's a beautiful thing to share because it's one of the things that we have to keep in mind, whether it be on this call each morning or when you go to church or if you read the Bible or any book you read, there's absolutely nothing that any of us should just be blindly buying into all of it without utilizing that gift that we have each been given to think and to make that separation, to take the good and leave the rest alone. It's not necessary to buy it all now. You can buy so much of it, and later on, with greater understanding, you can buy some more if that portion fits. But you're right on the button with that. One of the things that came to mind with what you just said, too, was you see these boys walking around with their pants hanging off their butt. And it's like you can look at such a thing as that and you can realize that is so stupid. Or you'll see some of these high heels women wear and you'll say that makes no sense. And yet people will do things of that sort and put themselves in pain or in danger. Can you imagine a truck coming down the street and you can't get out of the street because your pants are falling down? But to be accepted, to not be criticized, and that's basically what it is that you're talking about, the dumb things we will do for people to look at us in a certain way and not to be criticized. And if we start giving thought to all these things, there's just so much of this that we can each take inventory in our own lives and realize that I shouldn't just go along with this. If I gave thought to this, this doesn't make any sense. Well, why am I buying into that? And you'll find that to be true in this country and in other countries as well. And in doing so, you can start measuring and adjusting and making your own life and becoming your own person and give up the things that you have just bought into blindly. With that, back to you, Paul. All based on the criticism, all based on trying to avoid the criticism. By the way, when you feel good about who you are, the criticism does not have that effect on you. Back to you, Paul.
Melvin, I really love what you've shared and so appreciate that. And one of the things that stuck out to me when you were in that first part of what you were saying is, and I want to just reiterate it because this is important, you don't have to decide on everything you hear right away. Like, there's sometimes I hear something and I'll do what Melvin said. I'll just say to myself, I'm going to save that one for later. I'm not going to accept it. I'm not going to reject it, but I'm going to save that for a future date. You know, I'll study it out in my mind later, but I'll stop it and I won't let it in. And that's something we can do, you know, as we're listening. You know, we can hear something and say, there might be something to that. I'm going to save that for later. You know, I'm not going to accept it or reject it. So really, really good points, Melvin. Always appreciate hearing from you, my friend. Star 6, who's next?
Judy from Florida.
Judy, good morning.
Good morning. I also want to comment on what you opened with and the choice of thought. I want to share with you a text conversation that I had with my daughter-in-law yesterday. She is early 30s, stretched thin. One of my grandsons is a 4-year-old autistic. One is a 19-year-old on drugs, and my son is down having to go through back surgery a week from today. And she shared with me about how my 19-year-old grandson has decided that the world is going to end in November and not December this year, as the Mayans had predicted. And she was getting worried because there are survival kits coming up everywhere, and they're, you know, and I text back to her and reminded her that predictions are only guesses, even for the Mayans, and that there are doomsayers everywhere and there are hopeless people everywhere ready to believe the doomsayers because they have no hope. And I also shared with her my belief that the creative force that she and I share as calling Mother and Father God hasn't brought us this far to drop us on our heads and that they're not done creating. And she chose to believe what her mom believes and to believe that creation isn't done. And she thanked me for helping her get relief from a mind thought that was just nagging at her. And that is somebody who's not studying this book, but she realized that she did have a choice of thought, and that being barraged with all the negative, you know, from every side in her situation right now, she got a sense of relief. And that goes on with understanding that the criticism, I understand that when I criticize somebody, it's only because I want to make myself feel better about me. I learned that in my early 30s and was quite embarrassed by it. So I try hard to not criticize. And it's difficult from time to time. If you listen to the news, it's hard to not criticize others. So those are the negative things I keep out of my mind so I don't get bogged down with the negativity. And you guys helped me as I helped my daughter-in-law yesterday. And I love you for this. I thank you so much. Back to you.
Judy, we love you, and what a great real-life example of what we're talking about. And kudos to you for helping your daughter in that situation. I mean, wow, all the stuff going on in her life, and then, you know, the last thing she needs to be worrying about is, you know, the end of the world coming here in November. So what a powerful part you played. Yeah, go ahead, Melvin.
Don't make the mistake, people, of confusing sharing something with someone to help them and criticizing. They're not one and the same thing. And oftentimes we can share something with someone that would do them some good, and we dare not do so. Sometimes you can share something with someone and they can get upset. And other times you can share something with someone and they could really thank you and appreciate that you are looking out for them. And you cannot make that choice. Oftentimes we try to make the choice of how a person is going to accept or not accept something. Oftentimes that's not up to us. But just be careful on that in terms of the difference between criticizing when you're trying to hurt someone and actually really caring about somebody and sharing something with them that you think can be really helpful and beneficial to them. Back to you, Paul.
Good point. Good point. Star 6, who's next?
Hey, Paul, it's Lindy.
Hi, Lindy.
How are you all today?
We're good. How are you?
Awesome. Super good and getting better all the time.
Good.
But, yeah, your opening statement, I had to write a note about that so I didn't forget about that. Because, you know, we all decide what our own truth is. And as we gather better information and more information about things, you know, you change how you look and what your truth is by the information that you have. And, you know, it's everybody should be patting themselves on the back for being on these calls and getting more information and more understanding so you can develop a better truth. And, you know, one of the themes in all of this is that we are all learning and growing. And with our new knowledge, you know, sometimes we want to cram that down everybody else's throats. And people don't accept things when you do that. I was blessed to have an absolutely beautiful example in all ways in my grandmother. And since my mother died when I was a teenager, she was my role model as I came into adulthood. And I look at her, you know, she's not with us anymore. She went home about 6 years ago. But all of the lessons that I learned from her were never spoken. They were how she led her life, her example. She just walked the walk. She learned and she grew and she walked the walk.
Hey, Rick, we can hear you, buddy. Can you star 6 your line, please? Lindy, just you, star 6, if you would. Come back with us. You there, Lindy?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry.
Okay, sorry about that.
I got a new phone. I'm trying to learn how to use it. I don't know where I left off, but
your grandma, her words were never spoken, but she taught you lessons in her everything she did.
Yeah, she just walked the walk, and you know, right there where Rick was laughing.
Yeah, you still there? Lindy? We must have lost Lindy. Very powerful point, though. Very powerful point. Unspoken lessons. Star 6, who's next? Good morning, Rick Martin.
Well, Mr. Hutchins, how are you?
Excellent.
I thought I had it on mute, but no.
I know you did. Hearing your laugh brings us joy, though.
Well, it's great to hear, but, you know, you can recognize my voice and know who it is. That's pretty awesome. Oh, wow. This was about, she brings this dog, and when she walks inside the Starbucks, the dog just goes crazy, looking at her like, where are you going? Why are you leaving me here? Oh, wow. Anyways, this morning, this subject here, criticism, it's an interesting, thought concept, you know. It's like Melvin was saying, you talk about the meaning of constructive criticism and just criticizing somebody to put them down. And I listened to all the responses, and they're all valid. And I want to tell you something. I read a statement that Einstein said. You know, Einstein is probably second to God, one of the most quoted individual ever in life throughout the world. And Einstein said his conclusions, 99% of his conclusions were wrong. He said that himself. 99% of his conclusions. Now, if that's true for Einstein, what about you and me? You know, it's like you got to kind of like remove yourself. Remove yourself from. And that, you know, yes, you know, we're 7 billion strong in the world. And they say, look, I'm a small part of it, you know. And I hear people use the things like, it's like water off a duck's back and a lot of different things. But the real thing is, I go back to this and says, on criticism, you can basically profit on both sides of criticism. I guess I'm going to repeat it because I love this. Because nobody ever kicks a dead dog. It's just the way it is. There's a certain amount of envy. I mean, what I'm talking about was somebody who came to you for growth, came to you for mentorship. You see, that's a whole other thing. Your job is to criticize them. I mean, there's times when we are where we're looking to grow, to look for criticism from others. And it just shows your versatility, your understanding. It shows that you develop these lens in the world. Because we know that, hey, we don't really see the world as it is, but we see the world as we are. If we're looking to get better all the time, and like you said, Paul, keep that mind open. It's very difficult to keep an open mind if you don't have the lenses out there to see the different parts of the world. That's why you said, you got to let it stay open, see it, and you hear it. You start to develop lens when you hear it again, and you start to look for other references that clue you in that, hey, there might be some truth to all this. Because, like Einstein said, 99% of his conclusions were wrong. That helped me a lot. And when you really, really look at it, man, I said, well, you know, I'm here. I could learn from this guy. The reason they're criticizing me is actually, if I look at it, it makes me better. Anyways, I'm going to get off because the dog's here and my time is about up. So right back to you, and guys, have a wonderful day.
Rick, thank you so much for those wonderful words. I was trying to decide if the dog was agreeing or disagreeing with you, and I'm not sure, but I know you said some great stuff, so I agree with a lot of what you said. I love the line you said, we don't see the world as it really is. We see it as we are powerful. And the point about Einstein, my goodness, wow. Star 6, who's next?
Good morning, guys. It's Doc Fran from beautiful Palm City, Florida.
Good morning, Doc. You sound great.
Yeah, it is. It's a beautiful day. I'm alive, aware, awake, excited, enthusiastic, and now my new word, anticipatory. That is a great word. That's a great word. Fear of criticism. You know, this is... You know, I think this is one of the big rocks. And, Napoleon Hill says that, you know, he's not quite sure where this originated from, and he gives us a couple of choices. Well, maybe it's when fashion came into play. But my personal belief on it is that fear of criticism is deeply rooted in the very basic need of every being on this planet to be right in their beliefs, to be right in their actions, to be right in their words. And so any time we have a criticism, no matter how minor it is, and in actuality, all criticisms are insignificant. However, because any criticism rocks the very foundation of your rightness, it has a powerful impact on you. And then when we overlay it with judgments and significances based on the relative value of either the person delivering the criticism or the criticism itself and its perceived impact on our life, then we compound and magnify that problem for us. And we've all experienced that this is a very powerful fear. I gave the story a few days ago on the call about receiving a criticism from my mother relative to the success and growth of my personal private practice. And that drove my practice into reverse for 3 years. I mean, when I look back on it, I want to kick myself around the block 50 times. But I was absolutely powerless to understand that at the time. So, you know, rightness is a major drive in ourselves. And so having susceptibility to this fear of criticism is intrinsic in our natures. And now that we're armed with the knowledge of it, we can have a way to blunt its impact, prevent its impact in the largest degree, and continue to be right in our major definite purpose moving forward to the accomplishment of that. Back to you, Paul.
What a powerful insight, Doc. My goodness, as you were talking there, I was thinking about how true that is in my own life. Everything that you said, you know, the inherent need to feel that you're right, and when somebody gives you, someone criticizes you, who is he to say that? Who is he to say that I'm wrong? You know, and then you start justifying yourself and compound the problem in your own life by overlaying judgments against the person. Wow, that is a great insight, and I appreciate that. Thank you, Doc. Star 6, who's next?
Hey, Paul, Bill Gowder.
Hey, Bill, good morning.
Hey, how's it going? A couple things I'd like to add. the comment about 99% of Einstein said he was wrong, obviously demonstrating a little humility that everybody needs. And the other thing, getting back to a couple calls before where you mentioned that the good will always be challenged, sometimes those challenges are criticisms that aren't always good intentioned also. They're evil criticisms. So it was nice and refreshing to see that even Einstein, as brilliant as he was, had humility.
Love those thoughts, Bill. Thank you so much for sharing. And as Doc was talking, I was thinking to myself, okay, what could I put in my daily affirmation that would help me with this? And I wrote down, I don't have to be right all the time. And then, Bill, when you just brought that back up, I realized that we don't even have to be right 99% of the time, and we can still be geniuses. So powerful points, and absolutely humility, such an important trait. Star 6, who's next?
Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
You know, that was interesting. Doc mentioned where his mom criticized him in his practice. But perhaps if she didn't, we probably wouldn't have gotten to meet Doc. He's probably living a better life in this business than he would being a chiropractor. The freedom that you get from this business. The freedom to really choose and move about with whom you want, when you want. So we know in the medical profession that most those guys really get tied down and don't get what they really expected out of life after spending so much time studying and trying to live up to expectations of their parents and all that. You know, there's a lot of good that could have come out of that, actually. If you look on the flip side, I always say there's two sides to the coin. It depends on which side you want to look at, really. I think it was Andre Mauvois who said, things that are in line with our beliefs, well, you know how that goes. The stuff that are not in line, then we get upset about it, you know. And so it's really hard to take inventory of our own selves and realize, you know, yes, you know, we're a part of a whole system. Each part is important, but it's that humility, you know, just realize that, try and imagine the world without criticism, you know, it's going to be around. We don't believe it's ever going to disappear, so just kind of take it for what it is and try and profit from it. A lot of times, criticism about us, even from our enemies, so they don't hold back punches, are closer to the truth than you might imagine. So you might want to take a look at that, because I have, and it benefited me, because I used to respond to criticize pretty quickly. And I'm telling you that my life has changed tremendously when I don't have that quick response. Right back to you, Paul.
Thank you. Good points. Star 6, who's next?
Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
You know, I found one of the best things that I can do. It kind of ties into that thing about instead of trying to carpet the world, put on slippers. It's difficult to go out here and change the world and teach everyone how to speak to you and what to say and how not to. I often hear people say, don't say that to me. You know, they get all mad and upset. And once we take responsibility for ourselves, and it's we that have a responsibility to our own personal lives to learn how to not accept something more so than to get people to stop doing it. Because it's, you got a whole world out here to try to change. If you're going to get everybody to stop saying something to you or looking at you in a certain way, to where if you take responsibility for yourself, start feeling good about who you are, to where that does not have the effect that it has, now you're doing what you need to be doing. Now you're doing your own homework. Now you're taking responsibility for your life. And that's what we need to do. It's much easier to change ourselves than to try to change the world. Back to you, Paul.
Great point. I do want to share something real quick here as well. Doc mentioned how sometimes when we're criticized, we make it bigger in our own minds by the way we represent it to ourselves. And, you know, Rick also mentioned we don't see the world as it is, but we see the world as we are. And I just wanted to share something that can help us as we're representing things to ourselves, especially in the area of criticism. And it's through metaphors. We've talked about metaphors and how Anthony Robbins talks a lot about how we represent things to ourselves will determine how we feel, how we act, you know, a lot of things in our lives. And he says metaphors is one of the most powerful ways that we can represent things to ourselves in a more positive or a more negative manner. And I just want to give you a quick example of one metaphor that I was using that was not good. I've received some criticism lately, and the metaphor that I was using to represent what that criticism meant to me in my mind was I was saying to myself, it feels like this person was giving me a hug but stabbing me in the back with a knife at the same time. That was the metaphor that I was using to represent this situation to myself. Well, as I thought about that, that metaphor literally made me feel worse and worse and worse about the situation, and almost gave me physical pain as I thought about that. And then I realized I'm representing this situation to myself in a manner that is destructive. So I said, how can I change the metaphor? And I said, well, one, I got a great lesson out of this situation. So it's almost like this person came up to me and gave me a hug and then gave me a beautifully wrapped present. And inside that present was this lesson that I learned from this criticism, from this situation. And it may sound like a mind game, and maybe it is, but you know what? It works. It works. It works. So use that as you move forward and as you're representing things to yourself. Pay attention to how you're saying, you know, this is like this or this is like that, and look at those metaphors, and you can switch them around, and it'll make all the difference. So I hope that helps. Star 6, who's next?
Good morning, Paul. James Best.
James Best, good morning, sir.
How are you today?
Good, my friend.
Thank you. Really quickly, just wanted to comment on a couple of things. When we see and hear certain things, we will analyze it and we'll compute it in our minds, but we don't, like Melvin and Rick said, we don't have to own it. You know, with the example that Doc Fran gave, you know, being that person may be really close to you or a person that you look up to, you know, people will hold on to that and they'll dwell on it, you know, way, way too long. And the person that actually said it, you know, like you said, really didn't mean it in that manner, or, you know, they long forgot about it. You know, people will let a total stranger, you know, direct the rest of their day, so to say, or the rest of their week by, you know, one statement that was heard or one statement that was said. So we have to really be careful when we, you know, say things to different people, and as well as, you know, what people tell us, because, you know, we don't have to, you know, agree with it. We don't have to. It's just as an opinion. So when a person gives a constructive suggestion, you know, it still is their opinion. You can take it or you can leave it. Or you can, you know, like you said, you don't have to accept everything now. So you want to do your own due diligence and, you know, find out why, you know, maybe. Or, you know, if you don't, brush it off and, you know, move on. But, you know, people, they tend to, you know, hold on to things, you know, a lot longer than, you know, maybe it was intended. Or if it was, you know, to be of help for someone, and, you know, we didn't, you know, perceive it that way, or we didn't look at it that way. So we really have to, you know, kind of, you know, dissect everything for ourselves, everything that comes in as far as, like, the music. And, you know, when Melvin was saying about the gentlemen that wear their pants too low, I have three, you know, boys you know, myself. But, you know, I kind of try to, you know, not tell them, you know, all the things that's wrong with it, but I try to give them, you know, the opposite side as well. And, you know, tell them, well, that's not how, you know, you want everyone else to perceive you. And, you know, do you, you know, realize where the sagging of the pants originated from? So do some history when you see things or when you hear things so that you know why you're doing them or you know why you're accepting them. Back to you, Paul.
Great points, James. Really good to hear from you, my friend. Really appreciate those thoughts. Star 6, who's next?
This is Bill Wynn.
Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. Yeah, that's very true. The origination of the sagging pants, I think most people would not even do that if they realize it's a tradition within the prison system. And it was just a signal with, you know, certain things they wanted in the system. And if people realize what meant, and the same thing, too, is you know, people not gay people and everything. You know something? The biggest thing, YMCA song, is all sung at, like, the all the baseball games, football games, any type of social event is. And that song basically is about, it was sung by a gay group, the Village People, about their cruising in the YMCA. So it's really amazing. People do things without even knowing what they stand for. Back to you, Paul.
Thank you, Bill. Star 6, who's next?
Hey, Paul.
Yes.
It's Lindy. I'm back. I don't know what happened.
Welcome
I was just
back.
Battling on. I wanted to something. A thought had come to me yesterday, and my granddaughter was driving, and I was just looking at all the scenery, the beautiful, beautiful bright blue sky with white puffy clouds, and I thought, you know, what if this world that I am living in is all a figment of my imagination? And everything that happens around me and to me and in me is all what I choose. And then I thought, you know, whether that's true or whether it's not true, it's true. Because this Think and Grow Rich call has shown me that I can make my world anything I want it to be. And it was just one of those really profound aha moments. And, you know, that each of us creates our own world around us. And when we have insecurities and limited beliefs, that manifests things into our life, even though it's what we don't want, because they're there and they're on our minds and we're worried about things. And anyway, that was just one of the thoughts that I had, and I don't know if you guys got to hear it when I was talking to myself when I lost the call, but I wanted to make sure you heard that. And did you hear the part about the fixed mind?
No.
Okay, this is something I read yesterday that I've been studying some child psychology to help my grandkids. And Paula Derrick, she said there's two kinds of people that you either have a fixed mind or a growth mind. And when you're raising children, and all of us have a little child in us that hasn't grown up yet, and that's where our insecurities and our triggers in certain situations come from our subconscious, is from that little child inside of us. But anyway, she said, if we raise a child in a fixed mind, we're telling them how smart they are, and we're setting them up for failure because no one is brilliant at everything, and they tend to avoid the situations that they have to put some effort into because it's proving to themselves that they're not smart and they don't want to do that. So they develop into underachievers. But she said when you raise a child with a growth mindset and you're praising the child for the efforts they put in, no matter what the outcome, some are going to be excellent in certain areas because they have a talent for that, and then others they will put the effort in and they will develop exceptional skills for because they put the effort in. And that makes for happier children, makes for higher self-esteem, and that just made sense to me. And I really wanted to get that out there because I'd like to hear what other people have on the call to say about that or if they have examples of that. But it was a really and all of us, everybody on this call has a growth mindset or they wouldn't be here. And everyone should be patting themselves on the back for that. So back to you, Paul.
Lindy, very powerful comments. Growth mind or a fixed mind. That is a very powerful concept, and appreciate you sharing that. Bill, loved your comments as well. Star 6, who's next? We've got a few minutes left. You either
well,
have a
if nobody will get on.
Well, let's... go ahead, Rick. I was going to say we can give it a little bit more time, but if you've got something,
quick,
go ahead.
Yeah, Lindy, that was real powerful. That's right along the line of quantum physics. I've been looking at that, and that actually elevated my personal development, and I didn't go in-depth with it, but a lot of things about quantum physics, I've given it a lot of thought of in my life. And what you just said right there about the world is really what you created to be. There's a lot of truth to it. And the more and more I look around every day, the more and more it's becoming plausible. And so that was a wonderful. And that was a point that, see, right there again, it's another reference. It's taking on some serious legs. Thank you for bringing that out. Back to you, Paul.
Great thoughts, Rick. Star 6, who's next?
Hello?
Yes, hello.
This is Anita.
Hi, Anita.
Hi. This is just something that's been going over in my mind ever since, like, throughout the call, and I thought, well, maybe I'm supposed to share it. But I was married to a man. It was my dad. It was my son's dad. And during the time I was married to him, he would always, because my whole family was overweight. My grandparents were overweight. And so he always told me if I ever gained weight that he wouldn't love me no more. And so throughout our marriage, I starved myself to the point of being sick, and I was skin and bones, and then I got pregnant with Rob, and I gained quite a bit. I gained like 80 pounds with him. And anyway, so whenever Rob was like 5 months old, he started running around with another woman, and I always felt like it was my fault. And later on in life, when he left, I lost a lot. And then, you know, I thought, you know what? If I'd stopped and thought about it, he was a womanizer before I married him. I knew not to marry him. And so in my head, though, it was like it was my fault. So then I started eating a lot because I could, and I never could before, and then I gained too much weight. But anyway, things that we say to people have more effect on people than what people realize. And for many, many years, I always felt unloved because of that. And because of this call, getting on this call, and even though right now my husband and I are separated, but even right now, it's just I feel so good about myself, and I'm losing weight because I did gain a lot of weight, and I got up to like 315 pounds. And now I've lost going on 100. But anyway, it's just like I have such a better outlook about myself because of this call. And I just appreciate everybody out there, and I love you guys. Thanks. That's you, Paul.
Anita, we love you, and a big round of applause from everybody's hearts and souls for you losing 100 pounds. My gosh,
woo-hoo!
That is amazing. Congratulations. Wow,
we love
you,
Anita. You're awesome.
Thank you.
That's great. Thank you, Anita. Star 6, who's next?
Hey, Paul, this is Frank from Delaware.
Frank, good morning.
Good morning. You know, it was very interesting the way they separated criticism with constructive comments. He didn't even call it constructive criticism. He wanted everybody to realize that these are constructive comments and not even call it a criticism. So I found that very interesting because just like Anita was just talking about, criticism can become detrimental and hurtful. And for instance, as we're building an organization, when we're building an organization, we have to think about the way we talk to the people that are below us. And we have to take the training that we receive from this call, the training that we receive from Todd Young, from yourself, and from Doc Fran, and from Melvin. We have to take that into consideration before we decide to criticize somebody, because there's a way to constructively comment on what could be happening in a person's life, and there's criticism, and criticism sometimes is not positive, and constructive commenting is always positive, because the point of it is to get a person to realize something and get them to combat that. So that's all I wanted to say. Back to you, Paul.
Great thoughts, Frank. Thank you for sharing those. Star 6, who's next?
This is Liz.
Hi, Liz.
Hey, good morning. I just wanted to piggyback on what Frank was saying. I know in the book it talks about fear of criticism, but I have noticed since I've been pretty diligent in reciting my major definite purpose in the confidence formula every day, in that fifth item there, it talks about I will eliminate hatred, envy, jealousy, selfishness, and cynicism by developing love for all of humanity. And I think that not only should we, maybe naturally we fear criticism, but we should fear being the criticizer. When we are the criticizer, there is usually an emotion attached to that that is one of those I just read. And I think that way you know it's not constructive. You know, when you have that negative feeling in your body, wherever that is for you, your head, your stomach, I mean, we can feel a tightness somewhere when we're judging or criticizing other people. And I just think that I've been more aware of that as I've been reciting my definite purpose every day. I feel it and I'm able to stop it quicker and then move on to a better way to convey the message I'm trying to convey. So back to you.
Such a powerful point, Liz. Thank you so much for sharing that. Love,
hey,
anger. Yeah, go ahead.
This is Lindy. I want to just talk to you for a second, because I know the situation that you're hurting over, and you are such an awesome, loving, giving, caring man, and I appreciate you for that. And one thing that I learned, and it was later in life, and I went through a lot of pain until I learned it, is we have to look at what is our responsibility and what is not. And when you have a false sense of responsibility in situations like somehow you manifested it, but it wasn't of your doing, because each of us have free will, and we as individuals have no control over other people's free will. So, you know, if you didn't cause it, then it's not your fault. And I know you still have pain over it, but it helps when you don't feel like you're responsible for it. And in this situation, my friend, you are not responsible. You have always, everything I've seen you do since I've been involved in this organization, I've known of you, I'm learning to know you, you always have the best interest of everybody at heart. And for that, Paul, I thank you, and I love you. That's all.
Thank you, Lindy. I really appreciate that. Really do. Thank you. Brought a few tears to my eyes, my friend. Thank you. Star 6, who's next?
Hey, Paul, this is James again.
I think someone beat you just by a split second, James. Who was that other male voice there right before James?
Well, it was Doc Fran, but let James talk. That's fine, because I know he's got something probably based on Lindy's comments as well.
Go ahead, James.
Just really quickly, I just wanted to put a thought out there. The word is, or the phrase is constructive suggestion, or, the term constructive, as opposed to, you know, people take it as construction, like it has to form into something, or it has to, conform to their lives. But like I said, it's someone's opinion, so don't take it as construction where it has to build into something, or it has to remake who you are. Just take it as constructive. We have to, really look at that word, constructive suggestion. And
it's just a suggestion. So you can take it or you can leave it, but you have to see how it sits with, you know, your spirit man. When you hear something, how does it sit with your spirit? And, you know, that is how, you know, you will determine on, you know, what things you say to people and how you talk to people. But it is not construction. It is only constructive. Go ahead, Dr. Fran. Sorry about that.
No, James, not a problem, man. I love hearing you contribute, and I love hearing everybody contribute. Lindy's comments really brought a point to me with regard to criticism and the negative impact that it can have on people. And we're all taught the importance of accepting responsibility for our actions and being responsible for ourselves, etc. And as every state of mind, every reality that we operate under, there is a duality to that. And so the flip side of accepting responsibility for everything is a condition called responsibility as blame. And this is a negative condition in life. And the funny thing is that pretty much the only beings that allow themselves to fall into a self-induced condition of responsibility as blame are very often the most ethical, highest acting, highest energy individuals or beings on the planet. And it's an insidious tool that we use and that others use to cripple not only that person that is out there really doing for others, and we cripple ourselves with it as well by allowing it to creep into our thinkingness. And so there is resentment and jealousy against every individual who has broken out of the mold and is moving forward, who is recreating themselves in a higher condition in life. When individuals do that, that creates an inherent negative effect in the minds of those people that want to keep everyone exactly in the status quo. It's called peer pressure, guys. And when you move forward, it makes them less able to justify their lack of courage or their lack of willingness to move forward. And because we all want to be intrinsically right in our beliefs, the immediate response of those individuals is to try and claw you back into the comfort zone that was your previous level of consciousness. So, Lindy, thanks for that. I hope that that communicated to everybody on the phone. Back to you, Paul.
Wow, wonderful call. And Lindy, Doc, James, everyone who's commented and shared their wisdom, thank you for being here, and thank you for doing what we're doing on this call. I want to, as James was talking, there's two words that come to mind that I think are really important for us to ponder as we close out this call: constructive versus destructive. Constructive versus destructive. This call is constructive. We're constructing. We're building. We're lifting up. We're helping. We're moving people forward. We're painting a vision of a brighter future for each of us in our lives. And I love that. And as we're moving forward today, and as we're, you know, pondering criticism and, you know, constructive feedback and so on and so forth, let us just endeavor to be constructive versus destructive. And I know that all of us on the line have that intention deep within our hearts and our souls. We wouldn't be on this call if we didn't. I commend you. I salute you for that. I'm honored to be side by side in the ranks with people like you. So thank you for being here. Love you. Make it a great day. Have faith. Take action. Move forward with persistence, my friends. And we'll see you back here tomorrow morning on the Think and Grow Rich call.